Welcome to the Drill Down. We've got business stories behind stocks on the move. I'm Corey Johnson. Today, September 8 means it's episode number 91. Well, Coupa Software reminds people in the world of business there's plenty of room to grow when you're shrinking your expenses. And in a big quarter, Smartsheet shows that people are looking for new ways to work post-COVID. And we're going to talk about the growing business of animal health. Who didn't get a COVID puppy? We're going to talk about that growing business with Covetrus CEO Ben Wollin. This is an important supplier to virtually every vet you've ever seen. You want to hear about this company. But first, it's sponsor time.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Era. Never miss another critical event or insight ever. With Era, customize your company watch list and track key events, mentions, filings, and more, all within an easy-to-use, customizable interface. That's Era, AIERA.com.
And we hope you're listening to the Drill Down every day. Find a place to put into your daily schedule, your commute, your dog walk, your COVID dog walk. We hope you listen to us every day.
And the Drill Down is brought to you by Brain Trust, a global talent network that matches highly skilled technical freelancers with the world's most reputable brands. Brain Trust has helped clients like Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Porsche, Under Armour, and more build agile tech teams fast at a fraction of the cost. Visit braintrust.com, that's BRAINTRUST.com, to learn more.
All right, I'm Corey Johnson. Welcome to The Drill Down. We explain the business stories behind stocks on the move. And joining me, as always, executive producer Isaac Webster.
You got my last name right. Well done.
It's good to get to know you a little bit here.
We've known each other long enough. Yeah.
How long have we known each other?
Oh, God. Maybe just a few minutes.
Put it on like 10, 15 years, 10, 12 years maybe?
I don't like to put a number on it.
In any case.
Yeah. Let's get to the news. Yes.
Can you give us the three most important business stories of the day?
Number one, let's start with the Fed. The U.S. economic growth slowed over the summer due to the Delta variant, the Fed's beige book says. The report on economic activity cited widespread pullback in dining out, travel, and tourism, all related to the latest COVID surge. Now, this report, known as the Beige Book, collects anecdotes from businesses around the country. Supply problems and a shortage of available workers also held back growth in some sectors like auto and home sales.
And we're getting more and more clues about this when we hear all these companies, but it will be very interesting to what we see when we see third quarter reports from companies. For a lot of businesses, always the worst quarter, the most, you know, at risk quarter of the year. COVID's thrown everything upside down, but a Delta variant slowdown, you know, it's at a really kind of weak time for companies. We'll see how they perform. And as stimulus is slowing down and everything else, we'll see what this means for business results.
Now, speaking of the economy, demand for workers in the U.S. remained strong but leveled off in the late summer due to an easing of job openings for in-person services positions as the economic recovery showed signs of slowing due to Delta, the variant of COVID-19 that we talk about every day. Now, postings on job search site Indeed.com were up about 39% at the end of August from February 2020, ahead of the pandemic. That's marked a modest gain from the comparable week of July, when postings were up 37% from February 2020.
So Indeed's growing. We know we're big fans of Indeed. They're an advertiser here.
I'll be reading an Indeed ad in a few minutes.
We love the support from Indeed, but I think that they, you know, it is a very big and very growing platform, and the results that they're showing on their site start to tell us a lot about not just how Indeed is doing, but how the economy itself is doing.
Absolutely. And finally, Coinbase says the SEC is investigating its crypto lending program. Coinbase's co-founder and CEO, Brian Armstrong, disclosed the dispute in a series of tweets late last night on Tuesday. He called the SEC's actions, quote, sketchy and, quote, intimidation tactics behind closed doors, and said other crypto companies are able to offer such programs.
Yeah, he was scathing. I don't know if you read I think it was 14 tweets. Yeah. But I was greeted by those in the wee hours this morning and thought, oh, this is quite the screed. He's among the things that he said is that they proposed, you know, this crypto lending program is quite common. People deposit their crypto and get paid some interest, and the company is loaning them out. You know, when you have shares, when you leave with a brokerage of stock, the brokerage is lending them out. They're just not paying you for the interest that they're getting paid for those shares. And in fact, you know, what Armstrong said is that they said, hey, SEC, just FYI, we want to do this thing that many of the other exchanges are doing. And the SEC wouldn't tell them why they were against it. They just demanded a bunch of records and demanded to talk to some of the employees at Coinbase, at least according to Brian Armstrong, the CEO of Coinbase. But it was a fairly remarkable series of tweets from this, you know, now very important company in the world of business and crypto.
What I found the most interesting about this story is that I don't know Brian Armstrong personally, but I've been around him for quite a while, especially at our former employer, bringing him on other television programs there. He doesn't come across as someone who's going to have a Twitter trigger finger.
He seems mild-mannered and moderate
in his personality. So the fact that this tweet storm came from someone like Brian Armstrong, to me, I find surprising. However, you know, I don't know him personally.
But you know, it's like behind closed doors. My suspicion is that those tweets were vetted by lawyers.
Oh, sure.
You got to remember, like, important executives in the world, people, you know, in business, global leaders, they don't sit up at night eating cheeseburgers, sending out crazy tweets in their bathrobes.
No, they're just presidents of countries, right? They get banished to Florida.
What a less entertaining place it is as a result.
Oh, God. Corey, what stocks are you drilling down on today?
Let's start with ICU Medical.
ICU Medical trades under ICUI. Shares rose 26% today, and they've gained 40% in a year. Tell me about ICU Medical.
So ICU Medical is a, you know, decent-sized company that does kind of what it sounds like. They provide stuff for ICUs and hospitals and doctors' offices, and they announced a pretty big deal today in terms of how much they're spending. They're spending $2.3 billion in cash and stock to acquire Smiths Medical, a division of Smiths Group. I guess there's one less member of the group in Smiths Group, because Smiths Medical is now gone to ICU Medical. Smiths Medical's businesses, including syringe and ambulatory infusion devices, vascular access devices, vital care products. And so ICU Medical, based in San Clemente, California, wants to put all this under one roof and start to see themselves as the leading IV therapy company of any kind of IV therapy. And when they were on the conference call this morning talking about this somewhat surprising deal that they announced in the wee hours, they were asked, you know, very specifically, like, what's this going to do for revenues? And, okay, cool, you're buying another business, but that will help you grow those revenues. To which CEO Vivek Jain said, well, essentially, okay, you spend $2 billion. Well, what do you think?
I think if you're going to spend $2+ billion, you know, and at some point you have to believe you can impact the revenues. So I think we do think we have the right to win with the full suite of products. So we have to believe we can grow the revenues. I think we were saying we didn't put anything in the model for that, and it'll take a little bit of time as always, but we grew the company again, finally, from revenue perspective here last year. We think we're on track to do that this year. And I think that would certainly carry through to our expectations for what a combination would be.
So, yeah, you spend $2 billion, you expect the business to grow, not just buy the revenues of the former company and see them stay flat. But this is a company that has struggled to see revenues grow a lot, even in spite of a pandemic. And this might be the boost they need or not.
Corey, what is your next drill down?
Let's look at Coupa Software.
Coupa trades under Coup, C-O-U-P. Shares dropped 4% today, and they've lost 8% in a year. What's going on with Coupa?
So I think that sometimes when we talk about some of these companies for our listeners, they might all start to sound alike. Like, oh, something or other, software, something. I don't know. Think of Coupa as Recoup. So the idea of Coupa Software is that it manages the expense accounts and the expense programs across a corporation so that you can find out that if Joey's spending, you know, $1.50 for a box of paper clips and Jill is spending $1.25, maybe we should all go to Jill's vendor or maybe even have the same vendors. And it starts to look across an entire company to figure out how they can manage their expenses better with very modern software that does a lot of analytics and really figures out where money's being spent, where money's being overspent, and lets the company be aware of those things. And what they've found is that during COVID, and when companies were suddenly accelerating their digital transformation. There's our drinking game.
Digital transformation. Yum.
But when companies are becoming increasingly digital, that they are starting to look for ways to solve problems they didn't really know were solvable with software previously. So the company reported earnings revenue that was up 42% year over year to $179 million. The subscriptions up 40%, which was most of those revenues. And so, you know, very strong growth for this company. And, you know, the, one of the questions put to them was, is this because you've gotten bigger customers and you really just moved the business from small businesses to big businesses? And what would a, if you look at the annual subscription price point, is that number going up because you're able to charge the bigger businesses more money? Coupa used to sell more than kind of mid-size or smaller size businesses. CEO Rob Bernstein says, absolutely not. That, yeah, they're moving up market, but they've got really three different kinds of businesses and they're all working well. And all of them are seeing their average subscription price paid to Coupa go up. It's not just a move up market.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And I think it's worthwhile for everyone listening to understand. This is, we don't have a continued move up market. We have three really strong businesses in enterprise, in upper mid-market and mid-market, which have a really strong growth rate, have a very strong sales and marketing efficiency to them, that are operating in and of themselves separately as very good, strong businesses. Having said that, all when you look in aggregate, and by the way, individually, the average subscription, annual subscription price point has continued to grow in all segments, virtually every quarter now for 50 quarters, which is very, very encouraging. And that is not just a move up market. That is a continued move to deliver more and more of the BSM footprint, more and more of the value as a service to our customers, both upfront, as you noted, as well as for those that stay with us and add on more components. All of it boils down to this vision lock we have with our customers around digitally transforming their back office operations through modern business spend management solutions.
Vision lock. That sounds almost romantic.
Yeah, I've got butterflies.
I mean, vision, like it's like you and I have vision lock.
Yeah, I'm locked on
you
right now.
Business news for business people. Vision lock. We're locked in.
We're locked. We have a vision. We're locked into it. Marching forward.
And occasionally on Friday nights, loaded.
Corey, what is your next drill down?
We're
having too much fun today. We need to get back to business.
Stop. No more fun.
Yeah.
Podcast. Make a podcast. Smartsheet is a software company I want to look at right now. Another one of those rando software companies.
Smartsheet trades under SMAR. Shares fell 14% today, but they have gained 47% over the past 12 months. What's new with Smartsheet?
Yeah, they gained the shares up 47% over the last 12 months. Revenue's up 44% in the quarter they announced overnight, and they did $132 million for a company maybe you've never heard of. Maybe you have. Have you heard of this company?
I have. I don't know. But it's, not a well-known company. Based
agreed.
In Seattle, right?
And it's a $9 billion market cap, nothing to sneeze at.
Right.
Very interesting business, though, in that it's another one of these digital software solutions to things that people used to do on paper even last year. Mm-hmm. And that is that they help teams collaborate, share information across their share their to-do list with each other. It's like Monday.com. It's like Asana. It's one of these many companies that are Trello, that people use to do some of these things. It's really to help people understand and share projects as they build on these projects in a digital way. Now, they showed pretty good growth. Some Wall Street people wanted more, whatever. 44% growth to me year over year is pretty good. And what's interesting is that what they're saying is they're actually seeing not just a recovery of where we were in 2019. They really are seeing a totally different way of doing business. And people who started a digital transformation or accelerated a digital transformation during COVID, during 2020, I should say, we're still in the midst of COVID. I'm going to have to stop saying that. But in 2020, when companies started to look to be more digital, now they're really looking to be more digital and making wholesale changes. And that's what Smartsheet says they're benefiting from, or so says the chief financial officer, Pete Godbole.
I think what I would say is, you know, we're starting to see that recovery go beyond where we were in the COVID times. And you can see that in the metrics, whether it's the transactional volumes, whether you see that in the cycle times, you're seeing that in spades. So I think you're starting to see that. And I think as it relates to the, are we a systemic beneficiary of it? I think that's a longer term question, but clearly over the last 12 or 18 months, the fluency with the space has gone up and you're seeing that in transactional volumes.
So there you have it. People changing the way they work and they're seeing in the volume of deals that they're doing. Oh, coming up next, another thing you're seeing are COVID pets. A lot of people bought animals last year when they were cooped up at home. It's not a reference to Coupa software. It's a reference to Covetrus. The CEO, Ben Wolin, joins us in just a second. And, you know, the big questions here with this, Isaac, with this business is, can they keep the growth they got during COVID? And what does continuing spending on pets mean to a supplier like Covetrus, a supplier to veterinary clinics? We'll have those answers from the CEO right after this.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Braintrust, a global talent network that matches highly skilled technical freelancers with the world's most reputable brands. Braintrust has helped clients like Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Porsche, Under Armour, and more build agile tech teams fast at a fraction of the cost. Visit Braintrust.com, that's BRAINTRUST.com, to learn more. And the Drill Down is brought to you by Indeed. When you pay for a job site, you should know what you're getting. Get Indeed and only pay for quality candidates who meet your must-have requirements. Don't just hope for your perfect candidate will find you. Indeed's hiring tools will help you cut through the noise to hire faster and smarter. With Indeed assessments, choose from 135 skill sets to help make sure you're finding applications from people with the skills you need. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined and 1.5 times more hires than even internal referrals. So join the more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Get started right now. Drill Down listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/drilldown. That's right, a $75 credit at Indeed.com/drilldown. That's Indeed.com/drilldown. Offer valid through September 30th. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, welcome back to the Drill Down podcast. We're joined right now by Ben Wolin, the CEO of Covetrus. Now, I thought this initially was one of those stupid names that some consultant comes up with. It makes absolutely no sense. My favorite of all time was, can I say this on the air? Was when Cabletron renamed themselves into something that they wanted us to pronounce Enterasys, but everyone at the CNBC news desk would look at it at the coffee cups they sent around it and said, I think it says Enterasys. They surely didn't mean that. Why would Enterasys be better than Cabletron? But Covetrus makes a lot of sense if you one were to pronounce it. Covets are us. Is that is not how you pronounce it, though, is it?
No, it's Covetrus. But it would have been worse if it was Enterasys. So, you know, yes. I appreciate that you kind of kept it together.
Well, you guys put this company together somewhat recently. You were on the board and joined as CEO not all that long ago, but put it together sort of as pieces of another company. And then a merger. Explain that, sort of the origins of this company.
Yeah, it's an interesting background or an interesting story. So in February of 2019, Covetrus was created. It was the result of a merger of two entities. One was a spin out from Henry Schein, which is a large scale distributor and software company in the human health, dental health, and animal health space. And so the animal health division merged with a venture-backed technology company called Vets First Choice. And those two entities, which was really 30-plus companies in totality, came together and formed Covetrus in February of 2019 and became a public company at that time.
And what was the notion there? What strengths did that pull together? What weaknesses or divergent businesses were sort of carved away from the company?
Yeah, so the resulting company was about a little bit more than 5,000 people, $4 billion of revenue, and really had 3 lines of business. It had a traditional distribution business, so an intermediary between manufacturers and veterinarians, a software business, what we call PIMS, which is practice management software, the thing that a veterinarian would use to run their practice, and then pharmacy businesses. Vets make their money not just by providing services, but also buying and reselling medication. And so those 3 different businesses, which were kind of cut across Henry Schein and Vets First Choice, came together to provide this really one-stop solution for veterinarians to run their businesses.
Now, maybe it's because I'm here in Silicon Valley, but if I feel like the, you know, if we can call the San Francisco Ferry Building Silicon Valley, which why not? But it does seem that software, while it's not your biggest business at all, does seem to be kind of the glue and the growth engine and the thing that keeps you connected with all of these vets and makes your other businesses work. Is that am I overly Silicon Valley centric in that belief?
You know, even though you're in the Ferry Building, I think it counts. The software really is the gateway, or, you know, what we sometimes internally refer to as the operating system for the veterinary practice. You can't run a clinic, whether you're in, you know, Berlin, Germany, Topeka, Kansas, Sydney, Australia, without some sort of practice management software. It is the repository of all your information for your patients. It's the workflow tools that you use. It's no different than, you know, an electronic health record or EMR that you would get from a primary care physician or pediatrician. So it is the access point that everything revolves around. And as you said, it really provides glue that brings together all of these different pieces, whether it be products, distribution, pharmacy services, client communications, which is like a CRM tool for veterinarians. But it is very much the central point that everything pivots around.
And yet it's only about 2% of sales.
Correct. But in the US, we have north of 50% market share. So while we don't generate a ton of revenue and profits from it, it is, as I said, this key access or entry point for the rest of the products and services that we sell.
Now, how much of that business is in the cloud currently, and where do you think that's going to be going forward?
Yeah, so, you know, it's interesting. Historically, that type of solution was an on-prem solution, like literally a server sitting in the basement or the closet of the veterinarian's office. And it is moving towards the cloud. You know, right now we're a combination of on-prem and cloud. But, you know, over the next, you know, 5 to 10 years, you would expect that to really move to the cloud with all other applications that are required to run a veterinary practice.
That's not cheap for you development wise. It's also probably, although it's probably easier than it's ever been, it also seems like that would be the kind of thing that would be can be for you. See this with other companies. Adobe comes to mind in particular, where it was really difficult for those companies just in terms of it was good business. And it meant great for the long-term business, but in the short term, it really beat them up quarter to quarter because it was really lumpy. The sales that used to be wonderful when you'd have a new system upgrade didn't happen because it was stalled out over time with kind of monthly upgrades and so on.
Yeah, I mean, Adobe definitely is the poster child of that on-prem to cloud-based conversion. And you're right that in the moment, it was rocky and there was a lot of volatility, but over the long term, it really paid huge dividends for them and they came out the other side. So, you know, fortunately for us, the revenue contribution or the profit contribution is small, so we can handle some of that volatility. Yeah. But we actually have our first, major cloud release happening this quarter. Some of the products already in beta, and we should be in general release in Q1. So we're super excited about the investment that we made there and what's coming for customers in the coming months.
Now, explain to me how the RX management business works. Obviously, the pet owner and the vet make the decision about what to prescribe. But how do you guys get involved in that process so that you can see? Because you did, you know, nearly $400 million in revenues trailing in that area. It's a big business for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And now on basically a more than $500 million run rate. So the way that business works, so maybe I'll step back and just look at a veterinary practice in general. So about somewhere between 15 and 25% of a vet's profit comes from buying and reselling medication. That can be anything from a vaccine to a preventative to a nutraceutical. The way our RX management business works is it allows a vet to have a white labeled e-commerce solution where we are providing a best of breed e-commerce experience for that vet. We hold the inventory ourselves, so the veterinarian doesn't have to buy and resell the medication, and we have it actually delivered to their to their home. So it's a revenue share at the end of the day, with the vet, and we run this full soup to nuts e-commerce experience. So it's great for the veterinarian and great for the consumer.
And growing really fast.
And growing very fast.
Much faster than the rest of your business. Why is that growing so fast?
You know, a lot of it's just driven by the shift in consumer need and how consumers want to transact with their vet. You know, historically, you know, 10 years ago, you'd go to the veterinarian, they prescribe you a medication. If they didn't have it in-house, you'd have to come back a couple of days later. Now the vet says, great news, I'll just have it shipped to your home and I'll put you on auto ship a la Amazon Prime. And it'll start coming on a, you know, every other week or every month basis. And it'll have all the convenience of an Amazon yet connected to your local veterinarian.
It sounds like a fantastic practice. And let's get to COVID and the COVID puppy, right? The concept that so many people who didn't have pets before during the pandemic adopted pets, brought pets into their house.
I got a COVID puppy. It was a disaster, but I did. I already had a dog, but I succumbed to the family pressure. They claimed it was going to be this huge beneficial moment for our family, but we're still trying to get to the other side of that.
They hit me before the pandemic, and they're hitting me again now after for another one.
They're really great, but they're like more children.
You mean your actual family or the dogs themselves?
I mean both, but the dogs.
Both. Well, this was you aren't the only one, right? This was a huge trend that we saw. We talked about it on a recent podcast, and then I saw New York Magazine put it on the cover, I think, last week, that so many people adopted pets during this time. And I wonder what the effect that had on your business. And indeed, there's a suggestion, Ben, and I don't really care about your stock price, but there, you know, and certainly you do, but you know, in terms of how the business works, there seems to be a belief out there that this is a one-time phenomenon. And the growth that you had last year can't ever be seen again.
Yeah, you know, I mean, clearly COVID helped drive the business, drive the end market, I would say. Although I would also point out that pre-COVID, the animal health industry was growing nicely as well. So all I can tell you is that, you know, really month after month, week after week, we continue to see a lot of positive momentum in the business. You mentioned the prescription management business as an example, which is booming. The rest of the business is doing great as well, not just here in the U.S., but all over the globe. So I have a hard time imagining that, you know, the growth in the pet industry is going to slow down. Not only are people, you know, adopting more pets, but people are treating them like the kids that they have. And, you know, what used to be abnormal, say oncology treatment, arthritis treatment, diabetes treatment, even an ACL surgery for your pet is now commonplace. And so whether it's more pets or more discretionary spend on pets, we have a pretty rosy view of the future.
Explain to me the sales process for you guys. How do you get into a new vet? You said you've got 50% market share already in the software side, but how do you get into a new vet? How do you sort of upsell through that process and get them involved in more of your programs, not least of which is Rx?
Yeah, well, here in the U.S., we have several hundred salespeople, both on the phones and in the field, who have been doing business with our customers for, you know, more than a decade. Like I said, when the business came together, it was really a collection of assets. You had this distribution business, the software business, Rx management. So we're doing business with most vets in some form or fashion. And, you know, when we're doing a good job, we're bringing new products and services to market, introducing them to our existing customers or to new customers, and showing them how it can drive a better outcome for their business, whether that be a healthcare outcome or a business outcome.
So you're knocking on doors, or at least you used to be back when that was a thing.
Yeah,
so
you know,
where that, are you was, in that yeah, process it's, of going back to work and getting back in the field and traveling again and so on?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. You know, when COVID hit, as you probably know, so many veterinarians went to a model where they were, you know, deemed essential workers. But if you were a pet owner, you basically sat in your car outside the practice. The vet or the vet tech came and got your pet, you know, did the treatment, did the visit, and brought your pet back. And our salespeople had the kind of the same phenomenon happen to them. We're back in the field now, but obviously abiding by, you know, whatever local guideline or national guideline is in place, depending on the country you're in. And what I would say is, given the breadth of solutions that we have to offer, everything from products to software. You know, our relationship with our customers is pretty essential to that customer for their business to continue to thrive and succeed. So when we moved from, you know, in person to Zoom or telephone or, you know, FaceTime visits, whatever was required, a lot of that just kept trucking. And you see that in the results of the business.
Yeah. Are you seeing that change? I mean, I've heard that described as you give your dog over to the vet and then you got to pay the ransom for whatever they decided was necessary to get the dog back. But that's perhaps pejorative towards the vet. But I wonder if, you know, with Delta variant, with the shutdowns are kind of unequal across the country right now, if you're seeing a return to that and if that has an effect on your business. Does your business do better when the salesperson's in the building? And if they can't get in the building, does your business therefore do worse?
I would say that the data wouldn't support that just because the business has boomed in the last 2 years. You know, our business does well when we provide value to our customers that helps them either practice better healthcare or run a better business. Our salespeople do a great job of helping communicate that value and show, you know, helping solve problems for them. But ultimately, the business is built on driving value back to the customer. So I think we've shown that we're adaptive and can evolve. And if anything, you know, what have we learned in the last 2 years is that things are going to keep changing and that we'll have to keep changing with them.
And I suppose the metrics of growth aren't, you know, if you get a dog in 2020, you still have the dog in 2023, most likely. And so that spending continues.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like children. They, you know, you keep going and you likely don't give them back.
All right. Covetra CEO Ben Wolin, thank you very much. We do appreciate your time. Coming up next on the Drill Down, we have the Drill Down Bite, that one number that tells us a whole lot. We've got a number that's going to really help illuminate just how broad the market penetration is for Covetris here in the U.S., let alone in Europe. We'll have that number when the Drill Down continues.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Era. With Era, give yourself an information advantage. Connect directly to earnings calls and other investor events with live transcription and event intelligence. That's Era, AIERA.com.
And you have so many choices on where you want to listen to the drill down. Maybe like everyone else, you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts and iTunes or Pandora or Stitcher, maybe Audible, but maybe try Deezer or Listen Notes. But whatever it is, click the follow button. Make sure you catch every show.
And let us know what companies you think we should be drilling down on. Talk to us on Twitter and Instagram by following at Drill Down Pod and connect with us directly at our website, bizpod.net.
All right, we're back with a Drill Down Bite, that one number that tells us a whole lot about Covetris. Covetris. I don't know how we're supposed to pronounce. I know it's Covetris, Isaac, but I just thought, you know, it is Vets R Us. I think that's a clever title. Well, look, they have, and we mentioned this, 50% market share of all the veterinary practices in the country. It's 22,000 customers for their software alone. I think that gives them kind of a grip on customers for all the other stuff that they do, whether it's selling drugs, prescribing drugs, or whatever. That kind of gives us some stickiness that their competitors in the pause space don't have.
Nice. Well done with pause space. I mean, that's entrenched. I don't know how you get them out. You have to develop something better than what they offer.
Yeah, and 10% of them are on the cloud. So that adoption is happening apace, kind of bringing those systems up to modern times. And we are going to take a pause. I'm Corey Johnson. We appreciate your time. Isaac Webster is our executive producer. Ben Wilson is our editor extraordinaire. The Drill Down is a production of the Business Podcast Network.